I'm Makini Smith. After going through a divorce, my sister passing away, experiencing narcissistic abuse, and some significant health scares, I realized through sharing my story that I wasn't alone in my suffering. Suffering, subjective distress generated by the experience of being out of balance. In a deep dive to holistically heal mind, body, and soul is where I discovered peace, clarity, and connection. It is impossible to be truly wise without some real life hardship, and we cannot develop post-traumatic wisdom without making it through, and most importantly, through it together. Social connection builds resilience, and resilience helps create post-traumatic wisdom, and that wisdom leads to hope. Hope for you and others witnessing and participating in your healing, and hope for your community. A healthy community is a healing community, and a healing community is full of hope because it has seen its own people weather, survive, and thrive.
Moby Sharma is a leading expert focused on helping organizations unlock greater resilience in their teams to produce great work and master deep change. She's a law graduate and author whose father, Robin Sharma, is one of the world's best-selling authors and motivational speakers with books like The 5 a.m. Club and The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. Colby Sharma is a best-selling author of the book The Curveball. The book serves as a metaphor for the unexpected challenges, like COVID-19, that life throws at us. It narrates the remarkable journey of an individual facing difficulties who's, through timeless wisdom and daily strategies, achieved a significant life transformation. Colby has taken a page from his dad by offering the reader valuable, time-tested, tried-and-true life hacks that are needed now more than ever. It's a book for those who want to turn their fear into fuel, adversity into opportunity, and hardship into hope. Colby's clients include leading financial institutions such as the Bank of Nova Scotia and Manulife. So please welcome to the show, Colby Sharma.
Makini, great to be here. Great to be with the audience. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much for agreeing to come on and share your story with us and to share your gems with our audience. We've got listeners all over the globe that tune in each week to hear, you know, the wisdom from our guests. So I'm just excited to jump into our conversation.
My pleasure. Let's do it.
So I guess this is an icebreaker question. I love to go, you know, to the beginning before we get to where you are presently.
Yeah.
So, you know, before society starts to limit us, before, you know, our environment or our parents unintentionally limit us, you know, we have these vivid dreams or imaginations of what or who we want to be when we get older. So I would love to know, you know, who did Colby want to be? And how was that connected to who you are today?
Colby wanted to be so many things. I wanted to be a firefighter. I wanted to be a mountain climber. I wanted to be a construction worker. And there's pictures at various points of my childhood. I'd be in a hard hat and a high-vis vest and a tulle belt. I was obsessed with that Mount Everest documentary sometime in the 2000s. I pretended my grandfather was my Sherpa. That was times in the 2000s, you actually got a lot of snow in winter in Toronto. So we'd pack the snow up, yay big, pretend like, yes, I'm climbing Mount Everest. Come on, let's go. We only have so much till the summer closes. And I was just obsessed with mountains, obsessed with Everest. But I wanted to be all those things. And I think what I'm doing today is not too dissimilar, because I am living my dreams in a different way. I'm living my dreams, and I'm helping people become more resilient, overcome adversity in a proactive way as opposed to a reactive way, and just helping people find themselves in this world of, I learned this word, perma-crises since the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So what would you say is your earliest childhood memory that defines who you are today?
I was probably in grade one or two, and I'd go into like my friends' classrooms at elementary school, and I would just read randomly like a full-on page from Harry Potter, like not prompted, just random, just random, like chapter 10, just went off, you know, spat it out. And I loved reading. I loved being around words. I literally had a thirst and a curiosity for knowledge. And I love Harry Potter books to this day, and especially growing up as a kid. And that really led me for my own writing to, I've always had the goal to write a book. And I was diligent with that goal. And then I hit the pandemic hit. And then I had to find a way to get this book into the world called The Curveball. And I share some wisdom in the book. There's key points we have to know to overcome adversity.
Wow. Okay. So there's so much that you said that I want to unpack there. So you've always loved reading. You've always loved books. You've written a couple of books yourself. So let's go back to, I guess, working through, because you had a learning challenge. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about that, how you've worked through that to now becoming an author.
For sure. I had all throughout elementary school, I did learn differently. People used to say to my parents, and they were very proactive, especially my dad, and really getting me diagnosed and helping me with that initial journey, that unknown moment. I went to a school in Toronto to help me remedy it, and that was an unknown, you know, former Secretary of State of the U.S. Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, says there's known unknowns and there's unknown unknowns. I couldn't have prepared for that moment. But because I was able to surrender and accept and go through that very traumatic experience of braving an unknown as a child, you know, I think when we brave unknowns as adults compared to as children, we're better at accepting it to some extent, you know, but I accepted that situation carte blanche. I went to that school. I call that, you know, in my talks as well, my X-Men moment, because we're all together and we're dealing with neuroplasticity. Why is that important? So I learned neuroplasticity in real time. I regained my confidence. I found my best friend. And because of that, I was able to go to law school. And because of that, I was able to find myself and help others by calling my book The Curveball, because that was the curveball that I was thrown. And really, the lessons in the book are based from that time, or are oriented around that time in my life, going through adversity, braving the unknown, you know, how to be resilient. And it all stems from that moment.
Wow. Okay, so you said like in school, I guess that helped you to work through the learning challenges. How do you feel that that has shaped who you are today in overcoming those adversities?
It's a badge of honor. It's a huge badge of honor that I trusted myself to take that leap of faith. You know, as Marcus Aurelius says, all loss is change, and change is nature's delight. Mm-hmm. Unbeknownst to me, that would have changed. That changed everything in my life, and I'm profoundly grateful for the teachers at that school and the people I learned with. And I think we have those formative moments in our youth, in our schools, in our community groups, but we don't know up until many years later in life just how valuable those formative experiences can be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I feel like we've come quite a bit of ways today versus where we were, you know, how many years ago on understanding, especially, you know, neurodivergent children. You know, years ago, if you know, look up pictures, you know, these poor children, you know, they have them in like straitjackets and thinking that something is wrong with them, instead of now where we understand we all learn differently. We all function differently. You know, we've got five adult children in the house and everyone is diagnosed like somewhere on the spectrum, you know, for those that are listening, you know, with whether it be ADHD or autism or OCD or, you know, any of those things. So it's when you have family and a support system around you to help you understand how to thrive as your true self, instead of trying to force you to fit in to this particular mold, you know, understanding that you have all these beautiful strengths and
I don't know, like, I'll use my son as an example, where his way of learning and his way of being, I think he's like absolute genius. And, you know, someone else, and you're like, you know, what's wrong with your kid? Or, so, you know, all those different things. But when you're surrounded by a support system. So I guess I would love to know a little bit more about your support system that's helped you thrive.
Really, it starts with home. You know, I'm really grateful to have great parents, great grandparents. You know, my dad, you know, so supportive, but especially at that time, around 06, 07, getting me into that school, helping me with that whole process, instilling that confidence, you know, I'm going to be right here with you. I'm very grateful to have that, because I think so many people, resources become a question. Not only financial resources, but time resources. How much time can you allocate to devote yourself to this task, to helping someone in this process?
Mm-hmm.
It really begins at home, my family. And then friends, you know, friends, it's been a great source of joy. I'm really grateful to have five key friends that I've gone through in all stages of my life. I call them at least every single day. And that is just my way of just connecting with them, staying in touch with them, honing those bonds. Because I've moved quite a bit, and they've been in Toronto, but we're still as close today as we were 10, 15 years ago. And, you know, to that beautiful point about, you know, on the spectrum, you know, we all deserve to play in the sun and shine in the rain. You know, how do you see a rainbow? You have to go through a rainstorm. I think that word disability, it can be so stigmatizing. And I want to change it around and say, do not diss my innate ability.
Mm.
We all have innate abilities. We all have strengths. You know, I was a lawyer, worked in Toronto. You know, it's a very hard profession. It can be very, you know, lonely at times. And if you're not totally, you know, on board with what they want you to do, you're going to find yourself at a crossroads. And it's at the crossroads we get to define, how does that trajectory look going forward?
Yes. I love what you said there. Do not diss my innate ability. I love that. I love that. I love it. I love it so much. I had a previous guest come on, Canadian icon, Julie Black, and she was talking about her sister who also has a disability, and how her sister taught her to say, like, my disability is my ability. So finding the strengths that she has, you know, instead of highlighting, you know, not necessarily her weaknesses, but, you know, her areas that are not her strengths, and using that to thrive. So I love that.
We can't, you know, diminish the importance enough about externalities. Your external environment is so important. Who is supporting you? You know, what do you listen to? What do you listen to? What do you read? You know, your consummation diet. What is feeding into your diet each and every single day? It doesn't have to be a podcast. It doesn't have to be, you know, a Canadian Medical Association and how they view, you know, neurodivergency and all these things. But what really frees you mentally and spiritually? I love this book, you know, by Richard Bach called Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And it's about how the flock will limit you if you let yourself to be limited by that flock. And to really go beyond your limit and to really get to that nth degree, you know, we have to be cognizant who we're letting in and setting boundaries in a very healthy way to not let someone's conduct and energy affect who we choose to be and who we choose to see ourselves.
Absolutely. You know, and you spoke about, you know, your friends, even your family being great support systems. And that's one of the pillars of resilience, you know, having a healthy community around you. So I would love if you could share, you know, some tips and tools that you have for the women that are listening or the people that are listening about resilience.
So I love that word, resilience, because it comes from the Latin resiliens, which means to recoil or spring back from. And I think spring back from is very important if you look at this post-pandemic world that we find ourselves in, springing back and recoiling from economic damage, you know, whether our career would have gone sideways, whether even just feeling differently 2019 compared to what we're feeling now in 2024 about this whole velocity, the quantum of change that we're finding ourselves dealing with on a day by day by day basis. So really it goes to the heart of what it truly means to bounce back from stress. We can choose to see things as PTSD, or we can choose to see it as post-traumatic growth. And if you look at a lot of like the research, post-traumatic growth versus resilience, and people, because of in certain discrete factors and the responsiveness to trauma in certain ways, are either resilient or suffer post-traumatic growth. So resilience, I believe like the fount of how people become resilient really comes from how you respond, you know, to loss. As I share in the curveball, we sometimes have to lose something to find everything.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that your business went sideways. That is okay. Because you're in that loss, you're turning it around into a purposeful gain.
Mm-hmm.
I'd start a new business, one that is leaner, one that it is more responsive in terms to what your customers actually truly do need, whether it could be drop shipping and not having to rely on, you know, supply chain factors in the mix. So it could be the catalyst for you to repurpose your energies in different ways. Mm-hmm. I love that Marcus Aurelius quote, all loss is change and change is nature's delight. It is nature's delight if we choose to avail of that change.
Absolutely. I agree with everything you said, 1,000%. You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, I was already going through a rough time. I'd already spent a year in, I'd say, quarantine. You know, I had health challenges. I was in the hospital. I had major organ removed, like went through a breakup. A whole lot of stuff was happening. And I had pivoted my brand to focus on resilience. But I felt it so deeply that I had my daughter tattoo it on me. It says, resilience is my superpower. But, you know, being able to understand, not necessarily to react every time something happens, but to respond and to not be someone that, you know, things happen on a daily basis. You know, struggle happens to most of us. But instead of immediately reacting, being still and understanding that good can come from that. You know, like there's good and bad in all things. Not like even when the pandemic hit and everyone was like, oh my God, this is the end of the world. All these things were happening. But that year was probably one of my greatest years, you know, in business, in personal development, in all of those things, because I was able to be still and how I chose to respond to what was happening around me.
Absolutely. I think that ability to respond, that's a great privilege of a human being, that agency to respond. And we have Viktor Frankl to thank for that. You know, between the stimulus and the response, therein lies our freedom. But it's freedom in the void, freedom in the chaos, the destruction. You know, one of my favorite quotes from one of the former CEOs of IBM, let chaos reign and then reign in the chaos.
Mm.
And I think if you look at post-pandemic specifically, the working world, whether you're working from home, working in the office, your threes and twos, your fours and threes, however you choose to go around it. But how you choose to orientate yourself is going to be so important. How you choose to structure yourself. So really, I share this like acronym called PPE, Permanence, Perspective, and Experience, about resilience. Because we have to have a barbelled personality, a barbelled personality as a business leader, as a, you know, leader in your community. And how you do that, you take permanence away from the situation. You have the ability to respond, but you take permanence away by disassociating yourself personally with that adversity, with that challenge. You know, it's not that it's permanent forever, but it's only in that moment. And I think when we're trying to respond proactively, letting go of that permanence and not absorbing those scars and not absorbing it so it really affects us, because I think it's an energy vibe as well. You know, mm-hmm. that negative energy, we can choose to let it cloud our vision and our judgment. So the second one is perspective, getting a new perspective, whether it's going for a walk, whether it's, you know, I shared in some of my media interviews, mindful journaling about what is freeing you and how you're letting it affect or not affect you. And for some of the people listening today, and, you know, great work you're doing with your podcast, but when you're mindfully journaling, talk about the emotion that you felt pre, in, and then post. And one of the things that I have done when it comes to trauma and really like healing and dealing with, you know, whether it could be shame, whether it could be regret, whether it's, you know, I wasn't adept enough to avail myself adversities, is just burn it. Write the letter, do the journaling mindfully, and then burn it.
Mm-hmm.
It sparks something deep and it does not let permanence take hold of the situation.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love it. In watching one of your previous media interviews, I learned that your father is someone famous that I also look up to. So for the listeners who are listening, your father is the one and only Robin Sharma.
Yep.
So, you know, when we were talking about having, you know, support systems and things like that around, so how do I say this? I know from experience, even with my own children and even with interacting with my previous mentor's children, you know, sometimes there may be, I guess, a weight, or I'm trying to find the right word that I want to say here. But basically, when your parent or parents are influential people, are leaders that people look up to, there's almost where you feel like this weight to follow in their footsteps, or, you know, this weight that people feel that you have to live up to. And as a parent, I've always tried to let my children know they don't have to follow in my footsteps. They are their own people. They, you know, forge their own path in whatever area they want to go down. But I would love to know if you've ever felt any of those type of feelings as you're building your own legacy.
Yeah, I can totally appreciate that question and that perspective. And it's so good how you're leading in your own household with your sons. And I think your son had a birthday, so very happy birthday to him.
Thank you.
But in terms of myself, you know, I was told growing up that follow your path, whatever path you choose to take, I'll be here with you 100,000%. Whether it was choose to article, whether it was choose to work in law, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 25 years. If you choose to do that, I'll be back here with you 100,000%. I chose to do these things, law and then writing and then speaking and in this world of personal development, personal growth, because it's true to me, because it's true to me and it's true to the experiences that I've led personally. You know, I personally felt life's adversities. I've personally dealt with life's curveballs, life's challenges, and I'm the better for it. Mm-hmm. I'm the better for it in terms of my perspective, in terms of I have something valuable to say that I'm trying to make it my own. When I go in to speak to Bank of Nova Scotia or, you know, any kind of organization, this is what I'm trying to share with you because of my own experiences. And I spoke to Bank of Nova Scotia 2022, having worked for them in 2019. So I love how your career arc, if you let it and if you surrender to it and if you let your energy beam, you will get what's coming to you in a thousandfold.
Yes.
But he supported me and his guidance has been absolutely invaluable. He's an incredible, incredible father, and I'm very, very blessed to be his son.
I
have to say, though, you know, comparison is the thief of all joy, as we've heard 100,000 times before, but it's so true. I can let it steal my joy. I can let it steal my energy. I can let it choose to seem as, oh, this is someone legendary, someone big. Absolutely. I can choose to feel that weight on my shoulders, but I don't, because his being where he is, I choose to take inspiration from that. And I choose to see it as, here's what I can learn from on a day-by-day basis. Here's how I can show up in interviews. Here's how I can show up on the keynote stages and in books.
Yes, I love that. I strongly believe that some things are taught and some things are caught. So, you know, I may teach my kids to do certain things a certain way, but through how I live my life, by leading by example, there may be things that they choose to take with them on their path or things that they may choose to emulate, but they're not trying to walk in my shoes, per se.
100%. Yeah. 100%. I think post-pandemic, I think expectations of perfection and expectations of idealism have gone down dramatically.
Yes. Because
we know that adversity is our greatest common denominator. Adaptability is our greatest currency. So we don't need to feel pressured. We don't need to feel, you know, all is going to be lost if we don't follow the ideal path. So shed outer perfection and embrace inner reflection once again, but this time do it on for all the right reasons.
Yes, I love that. I love that. What beliefs and thoughts helped you push through in your toughest times and maybe even throughout the pandemic?
The first thing really is we've gone through adversity before. We know how to do it again. So that would be one. The second one would be detaching from failure. Detaching from failure, not letting myself be defined by my failure. I remember in the pandemic, I worked as a teller for the Bank of Nova Scotia, getting great experience hands-on dealing with customers, but my branch was robbed. And I remember how responsive they were to us. Like, are you okay? Are you feeling any PTSD? Are you feeling low on a scale of 1 to 10? How do you feel cognitively? How do you feel inside? And I think having that support system at an organization level is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And if I wasn't around great people, I think it would have had even more of an effect. Mm-hmm. So I'd say letting go of failure, detaching from failure, embracing adversity, and knowing too maybe that this too shall pass.
Yeah.
And because I was at home in the pandemic, I had a lot of time on my hands. It was a time of great reflection, reflecting on the world we're in right now, the world we came from, and really the world that we're trying to bring anew, create anew, full of people that deal with curveballs intelligently and proactively.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. On the topic of reflection, how do you feel, you know, society or culture or your environment shaped your identity?
I think it shapes it at a very cellular level. You know, if you're around bad people, it will shape that because you are the product of your association. Mm-hmm. If you're in traumatic environments, you will absorb some of that trauma to a degree. Now, trauma and adversity, I believe, are on spectrums. We can have trauma at this end of the spectrum, and we can have, you know, trauma at the benign end of the spectrum. But we all can choose to feel caught up in trauma if we let it, and if we do not really excavate that trauma. And how do we get rid of trauma? We really assess how it's playing a role in our lives. Career lives, you know, personal lives, familial lives, and we can choose to do something about it. We have that agency and the power to do stuff about it.
Absolutely.
And if you're not in a productive environment, and if you're not in an environment that really serves you, you know, it's okay to leave that environment. Mm-hmm. It's okay to, whether it's in a career, because I think so many people, especially some of the younger people coming up today, the millennials, they are faced with what is my ideal career? What is my ideal life? Because we spend a lot of time at work and in our working lives, but it's okay to try 5 different careers, 10 different careers, until you get the one that really screams the loudest to you and you are in an environment that holds space for you to accept yourselves and to be yourselves. One of my greatest, you know, career achievements, if it were, was when I worked for Vector Marketing selling Cutco knives. And I remember I was saying to my boss, look, I'm going to Calgary. I got this client out there. I'm going to go sell him knives and he's going to buy a lot of knives. I'm going to come back. I'm going to have some great numbers. He's like, I don't believe you'll do that. And he's like, I don't believe you'll do that. I don't believe you'll even get the money back that you spent on hotel and airfare. I said, well, I will prove you wrong. Mm. And I did. I came back. He bought great knives for, you know, his staff and his family. And I had some great numbers then. And if I wasn't able to show up for myself, coupled with my external environments, I wouldn't have had that successful of a tenure.
I love that. I do. I love that. I had another question for you based on something you just said, and then it just like totally like disappeared out of my brain. I'm sure it'll come to me later.
Do that.
Yeah, because like I'm listening so intently, and I'm like, okay, I have a question about that, and then I'm listening, and then totally the question left me, but I'm sure it'll come later. I would love to know, like, what is a misconception that most people have about you?
That you chose to do this career ad hoc, that there was no ignition, there was no spark, there was no, you know, light before the fuse was burned. That's a misconception, because it is in these culmination of these experiences that I'm able to have so much, I don't want to say to offer, but it's offering because of formative experiences.
Yes.
I can pull from each and every situation, trying to get much, much better at it. But I'm able to do that because I've been in a lot of like environments, and that's shaped my beliefs. That's shaped, you know, my responses to like adversity and in how I choose to bring certain information to life.
I love it. Yes. So I remember what I was going to say before, because it was, you were talking about experiences and working and having things figured out. And someone had sent me a video this morning. It was actually a Gary Vee video where he was talking about, you know, this expectation of people to have their life figured out in their early 20s and how unrealistic that is, and how, you know, throughout your 20s should be when you are exploring as much as you possibly can, when you're trying different things, you know, trying different businesses, different experiences, so that you can learn from it and have the experience so that you can, you know, decide what it is that you want to do with your life later on. He was just talking about how unfair it is for, you know, people who are 20 or by the time they finish high school or college to want to know what they are going to do for the rest of their life. Like, every decision that we make has brought us to where we are today. But like, I'm turning 44. And I think if someone had said to me when I was, I don't know, 19 years old, that I needed to know what I'm doing for the rest of my life, like, I would have never imagined that I would be here doing what I am today. It was just through trying different things, learning different things, figuring out what I enjoy, what I don't enjoy, you know, learning through my adversities, what I can manage, what I have the capacity for, you know, how I want to help, how I want to contribute to the world. So yeah, that was just to add to what you were saying before about your experience.
Totally. I think that statement, know what I want to do for the rest of my life, implies permanence. It implies shackling to a degree, like shackles mm-hmm. to a figment, shackles to a dream, shackles to, you know, a vocation. Or you can choose to see it as a signal. Shackles are a signal. So it is unrealistic that you'll ever really have anything like that figured out. You know, you learn as you go. You learn day by day, week by week, month by month. I'm turning 30 in April. This is what I'll be doing for many, many, many years to come, because I love it. I can't imagine doing anything else. I say that because I've been able to try and be in different environments. So to people, millennials and I believe Gen Z, Gen something today. Do not ever let yourself be defined by an ideal vocation, an ideal career path. You will never have that totally clear cut.
Yeah.
Second, to add to that point though, you'll never have this great time of like carte blanche in your 20s. That's absolutely true. But you'll never have distractions be as high as they are, you know, distractions with like, whether you choose to go out every night or choose to go out every weekend, whether you choose to be around people who lower and dim your frequencies, dim your energies. So explore and experiment, but do so in a proactive way, one that actually you might have some utility in the next 5, 10, 15 years.
Yes, absolutely. Based on what you just said, I have two questions. One, when in April is your birthday?
26.
The 26th?
Yep.
Wow, that's the same birthday as my father's mother.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And second question, because we were talking about habits and doing things in a proactive way. Like, what are habits that you're most proud of that have led to the positive changes in your life?
I like to do different things. Like, I like to do tennis twice a week. I like to do new gym classes, like doing a Pilates class. You know, I just like to try different things. Like someone asked me this as well. Like, you know, would you ever consider doing like a cold plunge? I'm like, I don't like to be cold, so I don't like to do a cold plunge. It's just not in my nature. I like to do some. I like to go out of my comfort zone in the realm of like what I just like to do. So I could try new things, like new gym classes, like Pilates, varying up my exercise routines. So that's just me. Like I took the initiative. I signed up for this basketball like after work league after like work, but it's a great thing to do like twice a week. Like I remember last week I played football with that same league, like British football. Like, all right, come on, lad, go, come on. That's an excellent slide tackle. These guys were like 6'4". And I hadn't played football in like 17 years since I was 12. And I had it handed to me. I did like one like slide tackle. I was like, yeah, lad, that's amazing. That's amazing. So I just like to try like different things when it comes to like exercise and feeling my best.
Love it. Love it. Love it. So before we go to the final segment of the show, I would love if you could tell the listeners where they could stay connected with you, where they can buy your books, where they can learn more from you.
100%. So for a few listeners, you can buy the book on Amazon in Audible and paperback form. Connect with me on Instagram at Colby Sharma Official, Facebook at Colby Sharma, and LinkedIn at Colby Sharma. If you want to get in touch about my speaking on resilience and how it can offer benefit to your organization to master change and continue to produce great work, just send me a message on LinkedIn and we'll connect from there.
Love it. Perfect. So I'll have all of the links so they can connect with you in the detailed section of the episode so they don't have to search too far.
Excellent.
Awesome. Okay. So the final segment of the show, it's kind of like a rapid fire. You know, you can answer one word or one sentence, but you know, I don't like to put people into a box. I get claustrophobic. So if you feel the need to expand, you're more than welcome to do so.
All good.
Okay. Let's see. What would you say is your superpower?
Attentive listening.
Okay. What inspires you the most about what you do?
Having the ability to shape people's lives and really help them get out of their own adversities and get out of themselves to the group.
Love it. Okay. Name a book that has changed or greatly impacted your life.
Jonathan Livingston Siegel by Richard Bach.
Okay. What's a new belief, behavior, or habit that has improved your life in the last 5 years?
Journaling.
Okay. What do I want to ask you next? What's a part of your journey that most people don't get to see?
How I show up for myself each and every single day. Good, bad, somewhere in between. Just keep being consistent. Just keep showing up.
Okay. Last but not least, what advice would you give your future self? Not your younger self, but your future self.
You deserve so many great things and you deserve a partner who really shows up for you, just like you show up for so many people around you.
Love it. Thank you so much, Colby, for taking the time to join us, for sharing your story, for sharing your adversities and all of your gems that you have used to get through them. I truly, truly appreciate you. Yeah, I don't take your time or your energy lightly. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, pleasure to be here. Thank you for this time and share my message with your audience. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to all you healers out there, until next time, don't forget to subscribe on all platforms, You can rate the show and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. I would love to hear what part of Colby's story resonated with you. What gems did you take away? What your aha moments were? Feel free to leave them in your review on Apple. And I want to thank each and every one of you that continues to listen each week to help the show rank globally in the top 1.5% of most popular podcasts out there. If you feel that you want to share some of Colby's tips on Instagram, feel free to screenshot this episode. And you can tag Colby at Colby Sharma Official. You can tag myself at The Real McKinney Smith. A healthy community is a healing community, and a healing community is full of hope because it has seen its own people weather, survive, and thrive. So let's continue to heal her.
If I may share one anecdote for your audience.
Yes.
For everyone out there, we succeed because of adversity, not in spite of it. So just remember that, whether it's professionally or personally, you succeed because of adversity, not in spite of it.
I love it. Thank you so much, Colby.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
To all of our healers out there, until next time, subscribe on all platforms and don't forget to rate the show and leave us a review on Apple Podcast. And thanks to each and every one of you that continues to listen each week to help the show rank globally in the top 1.5%, and that's out of over 3 million podcasts. We've got hundreds of thousands of downloads that we truly, truly appreciate all of you. You have no idea. If you could think of one person that would receive value from today's show, feel free to share it with them. Feel free to screenshot this week's episode, and you can tag myself at The Real McKinney Smith, and you can tag Colby at Colby Sharma Official. A healthy community is a healing community, and a healing community is full of hope because it has seen its own people weather, survive, and thrive. Let's continue to heal her.